Celebrating 25 years on the air. This is Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.
Notre Dame has defeated Louisville 104-101 in five overtimes.
Run! Brian Stavisky! It's the ball game and the Irish will play for another day!
But to the Notre Dame family, I can't say anything except I've been blessed.
The Penn Kingsman, 5A. State champs.
I think anytime you have a team with Skylar Diggins at the point, you better not count us out.
The Indianapolis Colts select Quentin Nelson.
Charlie Weiss's tenure as Notre Dame's football coach has come to an end.
Southland Washington has etched its name into Hoosier hysteria history.
Out of the 160 minor league teams, South Bend will be the best.
Three and he hits. Demetrius Jackson.
Score, Marshawn! 4-2 Bruins.
Brian Kelly, the new head coach at Notre Dame.
The Cubs win the World Series!
They score! Notre Dame, 3.7 seconds away from a spot in the national championship game.
The Clay Colonials win the state championship. They are living a dream.
Enrique Odunbolale wins the national championship for Notre Dame!
Here are your hosts, Darren Pritchett and Sean Stiers.
And thank you very much for joining us on WSBT Radio for Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat as we celebrate 25 years on the air. We're brought to you by our longtime title sponsor, Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. By the Food Bank of Northern Indiana, hunger is a story we can end. Find out how at feedindiana.org. And by Eddy Street Commons at Notre Dame, hosting Coffee and Cars this Saturday, July 13th from 9 until 1. Sean Stiers back at our WSBT studios. Eric Hansen from the Tribune still enjoying some vacation time. He'll be back in about 2 weeks here on WSBT Radio. I'm Darren Pritchett at Four Winds Field, where South Bend and Kane County will wrap up their three-game series tonight. Kane County won Game 1 Wednesday 3-2. Cubs won a squeaker last night 2-1. So the rubber game of the three-game series coming up tonight at 7:35. Tickets are available. We've got fireworks after the game, and our pregame coverage will get started at 7:20. Our audio will be used on the simulcast on the My Michiana broadcast tonight right here in the South Bend area. Well, coming up on our program this evening, we will update you on the Cubs and the Pirates. They are playing the first game of their second halves at Wrigley Field this afternoon, and it has been a pitcher's duel up until about 10 minutes ago. We'll explain what happened in just a little bit. We've got some bold predictions. NFL.com has come out with the best trios in the National Football League. I guess this kind of goes back to the triplet days with the Cowboys, with Aikman, Smith, and Irvin.
Yeah.
So we can't call them triplets. That's the Cowboys' thing. So it's the best trios right. in football. So we'll give you the top three. And I would say number three surprised me a tad bit. And where do the Colts, the Lions, and Bears stack up? Would you believe me if I told you that amongst the Colts, Lions, and Bears, for trios, quarterback, running back, wide receiver, the Bears are behind the other two?
I would.
Some Bears fans might be a little surprised. Although we know what's on the list, and we'll give all the details later, but they didn't have Cohen as the running back. Now, that could really change things.
Yeah, that's a big difference.
They had David Montgomery as the starting running back, but Cohen is the deal breaker for a lot of defenses in the National Football League. Our My 5 question of the day later on this hour. Sean will rank the five most difficult games on the Notre Dame men's basketball non-conference schedule. Next hour, I'll take care of my National League power rankings. My power rankings have not changed since last week. I kept them in check. We'll have rapid fire, a Chicago Cubs report, and then Kane County and South Bend. Again, pregame at 7:20. First pitch at 7:35 here on WSBT Radio. And later on in the 6 o'clock hour, I'll pass along the story that the Wall Street Journal had today, that the NFL has a plan for an 18-game regular season and cut back on some of those preseason games. But there's an asterisk. There's a detail that they have that I think most people, when I say it, are going to be like, you got to be kidding me. There's a little trade-off. So we'll tease it now. We'll tell you later here on Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat. We begin with the Chicago Cubs and the Pittsburgh Pirates playing at Wrigley Field this afternoon. The starting pitchers not involved in the decision. It's not their fault the offenses could not score today, but Yu Darvish was terrific for Chicago. This is really good news for Joe Maddon's team.
Absolutely.
6 innings, 2 hits, no runs, a walk, 8 strikeouts. He threw strikes. 94 pitches, 62 strikes. One of the more efficient days for Yu Darvish, and if this is more the norm rather than fluky, then I think the projections of the Chicago Cubs look a whole lot different in the second half, because beyond Hendricks and Lester and eventually when Hamels gets back, there's question marks. And I'll tell you what, if you get anything close to this, 2 out of every 3 starts from Yu Darvish, all of a sudden this Cub team looks a whole lot different. And to me, that's the separation between the Cubs and the Brewers.
And that is the first time this season that Darvish had an outing where he did not give up a run. I'm looking for last year, and that is the first time as a Chicago Cub where he had a shutout outing. So, I mean, you'll take that 8 days out of 7.
Wow, I did not realize that. Well, I do know he has never won a game at Wrigley Field since he signed that big contract, which is kind of surprising. Not his fault today he didn't get the win. He pitched definitely well enough. And from that point on, Ryan has gotten 2 outs, Cishek an out, and now Pedro Strop on in the 8th inning. The Cubs have taken a 3-0 lead thanks to a 3-run bottom of the 7th inning. It all started with a Chris Bryant home run. Melky Cabrera, the right fielder for the Pirates, chased after a foul pop down the right field line. And if you know Wrigley Field, the right field foul line and the sidewall, there's not much separation. It's almost impossible for the ball to hit the warning track down in that area and not be fair. There's just not much space. Well, the ball hit the sidewall, and Cabrera was battling the sun the whole way, and he could not make the catch. So it was a foul ball, and, of course, the next pitch, a cement mixer curveball that backed up right into the barrel of Chris Bryant, who creamed it over the left field wall to give the Cubs a 1-0 lead, Bryant's 18th home run of the year. And I think you mentioned this yesterday about Bryant's spot in the order. Today, they went Schwarber, Baez, then Bryant, Rizzo, Caratini, Hayward, and then Garcia, Almora, and Darvish. So Bryant was hitting third today, which is probably more to his liking.
Sounds that way. Based on what he was saying and what I read, it was either earlier this week or late last week, right around the All-Star break. So who knows? Maybe that gets him going.
All right, Robel Garcia, the second baseman fine, has an RBI in the 7th inning today. That put the Cubs in front 2-0. And then Caratini would score the 3rd run. David Bode walked with the bases loaded. He picks up the RBI. So the Cubs scored 3 times in the bottom of the 7th. They lead 3-0 in the top of the 8th. Strope has just given up a double. And right now the Pirates have the tying run on deck with 2 outs in the top of the 8th inning. Cubs lead by a score of 3-0. And the Cubs start today a half a game in front of Milwaukee, 2 in front of St. Louis, 2.5 in front of the team they're playing, the Pittsburgh Pirates. And the Cubs are kicking off a 9-game homestand to kick off the second half of the Major League Baseball season. As I think you mentioned yesterday, the Cubs started 2-7 on the road. Their first 9 games of the first half were on the road. Now they start with 9 straight at home. Very interesting stretch for the Cubs, who have played great baseball at Wrigley Field so far this year. And Strope just walked a guy. So it's now 1st and 2nd, 2 outs, and the tying run will come to the plate. And Starling Marte, a very talented right-handed batter for Pittsburgh. So we'll keep you updated on the progress of the Cubbies and the Buccos at Wrigley Field. Let's get to some bold predictions. I've come up with a few questions, and I'll allow you to give me a sentence, and then you can further explain what you came up with to back up your statement. So here's the first one. We'll go with baseball first. How many NL Central teams will make the Major League Baseball postseason, and the top reason why?
Do you want just the sentence on how many are going to make it first?
Yes.
Okay, so I think 2 teams will make it.
Okay. And now back up your statement.
Okay. Well, and I think that as of right, well, I know that as of right now, the Brewers are just a half game back for the second wild card spot. And I think two teams in the Central, at least two, are going to fall drastically out of things. And that's going to help the two teams that are in contention right now.
Well, I have one team from the NL Central making the postseason, and that's the Chicago Cubs. They will win the division. The Brewers and the Cardinals will come up short. Pittsburgh and the Reds as well. I think there's going to be a team that's going to come out of the NL East, and I still think there's a good chance it's Philadelphia, despite the fact they're behind Washington right now. And I'm just kind of big on the Padres right now as a team that could sneak in and get the second wild card. Maybe it's Arizona as well. Colorado can't forget about them. So I think there's some good possibilities, but I think the Cubs will be the only team that makes the playoffs from the NL Central. Okay, next bold prediction question. Who will record the most combined rushing and passing touchdowns in 2019? You have two choices. Notre Dame's Ian Book or Central Florida's Brandon Wimbush, who we believe will be the starter and plays a much easier schedule than Book.
I think it's going to be Ian Book who'll have more.
Okay.
And my rationale, he had 23 total touchdowns last year. Wimbush, of course, he had four last year. Mm-hmm. He had 30 total touchdowns in 2017. And I am not confident enough that he will get that many at UCF this year. I think Book will have more than 23. I don't think Wimbush will get to 30.
And Marte just hit a three-run home run to tie it. He hit into the street over everything in left center. Stroke just threw a cement mixing slider. Mm. And we are 3-3 in the top of the eighth inning.
And
sorry to bring that bad news, but that was a launched home run. The wind's blowing out to left, but no wind necessary. Holy cow. Well, that quieted the folks at Wrigley. They were just getting all riled up for the third out of the eighth inning, and Mr. Marte just hit a dinger. I want to watch the replay again.
Can I change my answer to question number one?
Yes. Well, yeah, that was a pitch. I think it was a slider. It did not move. It backed up just like the pitch Brian hit. So that was a big mistake by Strope, and the bullpen woes continue for the Northsiders. Back to the question that I asked, I think it will be Ian Book. I think Wimbush can put up good numbers because of the schedule that he will be facing. He does have Stanford and Pittsburgh. Those are good opponents, but there's a lot of weakness in the schedule. So he has a chance to possibly build up some good numbers because of the competition level, but I don't think there's any guarantee that he's going to be a well-above-average quarterback from what we saw at Notre Dame from a passing standpoint. I'm very confident in Ian Book and his skill position players. I think his offensive line gives him a great opportunity to succeed, as does his offensive coordinator. So I think it will be, without a doubt, Ian Book. Another bold prediction question. Which radio station will see their team win the most regular season games? You have two choices. Number one, Mighty WSBT Radio, the home of the Indianapolis Colts, or you can go with our station down the hall and our rival for this question, Z94.3, the Chicago Bears.
I am going to go, I like the phrasing of this question, by the way, which station is going to have it. It's going to be WSBT and the Colts. I think they're going to have 10 or 11 wins. Both of these teams face first-place schedules after finishing in first place last year. I think the Colts are better built to deal with it as well as their competition. I think they'll have 10 or 11 wins, and the Bears will have around 9 wins.
I like your rationale. I'm going with the station that helps pay my bills. I'm going with WSBT Radio and the Indianapolis Colts. They play in a division where I think it is easier to pick up to 6 divisional wins, although Houston's going to be good. Jacksonville with Foles, they could be better. Tennessee's okay, but Aaron Rodgers, that scares me. The Vikings have a ton of talent. If they can just put it together, the talent is there to overtake the Bears in that division. The Lions, gosh, I hate to say it, but they're just kind of the Lions. Until they do something, they're just kind of that same old team that wins 6, 7, 8 games, rounding there somewhere. So I don't consider them a big threat. But I think there's just more competition for the Bears. And, oh, by the way, Andrew Luck plays for the Colts, so that gives you a great opportunity to succeed every time you get on the field. And boy, the way they have drafted in Indianapolis, it has been superb. The Bears have gotten a lot better too. But yeah, I'm going to go with WSBT, and I'm going to take the Chicago or the Indianapolis Colts to have more regular season wins than Z94.3's Chicago Bears.
All right.
See, the next question should be, who will have more wins, the Colts and Bears combined, or the Irish hockey team on Z94.3? Maybe that's for another day.
I like that.
Well, I know the answer to that. That's easy. Okay, next up in our bold predictions, James Harden and Russell Westbrook, teammates in Houston. That's going to work after OKC dealt Westbrook to the Rockets. So do you feel like that's going to be a combination that will provide success for the Houston Rockets?
It's a very interesting combination. Mike D'Antoni is a good coach. I think the Rockets are going to have the most dribbling backcourt in the NBA because both of these guys are ISO ball guys. They'll stand, dribble the ball for like 20 seconds, and then they're either going to shoot or maybe drive and dish. There's going to be a lot of dribbling, and I don't know who's going to get up all the shots in that backcourt. A lot of talent there. They've obviously played together before.
They should be the Houston Alphas. You got two alpha players in Westbrook and Harden who have the ball in their hand the whole time. You know, you see these superpower teams put together. The thing about Curry, Thompson, and Durant, they still move the ball. There was no really selfish play when they all came together. But these two, they're so similar in holding the ball in their hand. I just wonder how that's going to work out. If they can come in with the attitude they're going to help each other, then sky's the limit for this team. But you're asking one to do something they're not used to doing. And I know they played together in Oklahoma City with Kevin Durant.
Yeah.
But that was when they were much younger and in different roles. To me, I think this is going to have a hard time working just because they both want the ball in their hand and there's only one basketball on the floor at one time. So to me, it looks cool. It brings, I think, more drama to the NBA. My son said this today. He's like, this is so much better than just Golden State winning the championship. He's like, there's so many different storylines right now that you can talk about. And he's actually right.
Seriously.
You look at all the different teams, Brooklyn, the Clippers, the Lakers, the Warriors, the Bucks. I mean, there's so many different things going on right now. As a non-NBA fan, I'm actually kind of intrigued if this is going to be kind of an unpredictable year after so many years of Golden State Cleveland. This could be something very, very odd this year. We'll see.
And Oklahoma City is going to be bad for a few years now because it sounds like the CP3 is going to be traded pretty soon as well. But they've already got like a million first round picks, so they're going to be bad for a few years, but they're going to restock it with talent pretty quickly here with all the picks they've got.
Yeah. If they can nail it. I just, as a season ticket holder, how do you spend that type of money on that product?
Especially in a smaller market like that.
Yeah, even though, you know, in time they could be good. No guarantee, but they could or should be good. But in the meantime, it could be 3 years of winning maybe a total of 55 games. That could be tough to watch.
Very true.
All right, we end with another baseball bold prediction question. Not counting the National League Central. Forget about the Central. The other five Major League Baseball divisions all have the division leader at least 5.5 games in front of the next closest contender. So which All-Star break division leader is most likely to not win their division? Again, we're not talking about the NL Central.
Mm-hmm.
So which of these teams is the most likely to not win their division? Which is the one you believe has the most likely chance of blowing it? Dodgers, Braves, Twins, Astros, Yankees.
This is tough because I'm fairly confident in all these teams. So I have
to go. I'll tell you what, I'll give you another option then. If you think they're all going to win the division, I'll give you that choice as well because that's bold.
Well, I'll stick with my original answer because the Braves are the one that I'm probably the least confident in. I'm really confident in those other four. So I just with Atlanta, their lead against the Nationals is 6. The Phillies are 6.5 games back. I don't feel like either one of those teams have played their best baseball yet. So that's why I hedge towards the Braves with that answer.
Okay. I was not laughing at you if you heard me giggling.
I'm assuming player. You're still watching the game, yeah.
Yeah, a cup. It was Baez hit a fly ball to right, and Cabrera, who had trouble with that fly ball a moment ago before the Bryan home run, was shielding his eyes on a high fly ball, and he caught it. And obviously the right field fans have been giving him grief, so he turned around and showed him the ball first in his glove, and then he threw it into the infield, and he took his hat off and bowed to the crowd. That was pretty good. Well, you know what? Since I'm changing the rules of my bold prediction question, I'm going to go bold and say everybody leading their division right now will go on to win their division title. So I'm going to say the Dodgers, who are 14 and a half in front, forget about it. I'll say the Braves will hold on. They're going to add a starting pitcher to solidify themselves and maybe a bullpen piece. Twins and Indians are scary. I'll say Minnesota holds on. Houston, definitely. Yankees, definitely. So I'm going to go bold, and I'm going to say everybody leading their division right now will win a division title.
All right.
I'm worried about the Twins Indians, but they still don't have Kluber back. Carrasco is going through the leukemia treatments. It sounds like he could come back here not too far down the road, so they could overtake them. But to me, Astros, Yankees, and Dodgers, those are done.
Yeah.
Even though Houston didn't win last night against Texas, but Braves, Twins, I would say that's up for grabs. And, of course, the Cubs and the Brewers were not part of that conversation.
Yeah.
All right, so those are some bold predictions. It is 527 Sports Beat tonight, brought to you by our friends at Budweiser. Eddie Street Commons at Notre Dame, the Coffee and Cars event tomorrow from 9 to 1, and the Food Bank of Northern Indiana. Coming up next, we'll go to the National Football League. We're going to think quarterback, running back, wide receiver. Who are the best trios currently in the National Football League? The team at the top, you'll be like, yeah, I can buy that. Number two, yeah, I guess so. Number three, wait a minute. Shouldn't they do something on the field first before they're number three? And then where do the Colts, Lions, and Bears stack up on this NFL.com list? We'll give you all the answers to all those questions coming up next. Sean and Darren with you. It is 528 on your home of the Fighting Irish, 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Sean Stiers, Darren Pritchett, Sports Beat on WSBT Radio. 28 minutes in front of 6 o'clock, South Bend Cubs baseball tonight. 7:20 pregame, 7:35. First pitch, Kane County taking on South Bend. Cubs and Pirates, bottom of the 8th inning. They are 3-3. Cubs have a runner on first base and two outs as they try to win game one of the second half and kicking off a 9-game homestand against the Pittsburgh Pirates. NFL.com trying to get everybody ready for the start of the National Football League season. And the Bears and the Packers will be the first game this year, that opening Thursday night game, as the NFL celebrates 100 years of play. And so the great rivalry is going to be first Packers and Bears at Soldier Field. And you'll be able to hear that particular game on our sister station, Z94.3 FM. So to get you in the mood for a little NFL conversation, NFL.com, their panel has put together the best trios in the National Football League. One quarterback, one running back, and one wide receiver. So they have ranked the three as a bunch, as a bundle, I guess, so to speak. So here's the top three. Now, you've had a chance to see this in advance, so you've had a chance to form an opinion. And I wish we had a direct reaction button from our listeners, because number three just shocks me. I could see them being in the top 10, but top three, to me, this is assuming it's all going to go to plan. So number three, in terms of best trios in the National Football League, number three is the Cleveland Browns. Baker Mayfield at quarterback, Nick Chubb at running back, and Odell Beckham Jr. at wide receiver. So your direct, quick reaction to that particular number three being the Cleveland Browns?
A little bit surprising, but at the same time, I mean, you do have Odell Beckham Jr. Do we really know what Baker Mayfield is as a quarterback? I think that's got to be. That's pretty bold to have the Cleveland Browns at number three on that list, especially when you consider some of the quarterbacks, or, you know, the rest of the quarterbacks who are behind him on this list. But the problem is the pairings I think, that come with some of these guys. Some of them have a good wide receiver. Some of them have a good running back, but it's pretty hard. Not many have all three.
Well, I think Mayfield has the ability to be an above-average quarterback this year for Cleveland, as the Cubs may take the lead here in the bottom of the eighth. They do. It's 4-3. But Chubb is a nice player. I don't think he's a game changer. And then you've got Odell Beckham Jr. Now, what are you going to get from him? We have the one-handed catch against the Cowboys, which continues to almost
make his
be
career.
His resume
yeah.
in the National Football League. Now, he's got 390 receptions so far in his NFL career. I mean, he has the makings of being an elite guy. He's getting paid to be an elite guy. But the last 2 years combined, he's played 16 games. Four in 2017, 12 in 2018. Last year in 12 games, pretty good. 77 catches, 1,052 yards for an offense that was a little up and down. So, yeah, he's got the capabilities of being good, but I think that's awfully ambitious to put Cleveland that high on the list. I mean, Nick Chubb is not going to be confused with Todd Gurley or Tarik Cohen. I'm thinking it's Mayfield and Beckham leading the charge in that number three ranking.
Yeah, and when you look at how they did this, they, for each of these trios, they ranked each guy by their position. They have Baker Mayfield as the number nine mm-hmm. quarterback, Chubb is the 10th running back.
Wow.
Which I don't know about. I mean, that's a really bold statement right there, and Odell Beckham Jr. as the fourth best wide receiver, which, again, just what you said, he's really made his whole career on making a fantastic catch with one hand and a rubberized sticky glove. I mean, I mean, that's what it all comes in. He's going to need those gloves playing in Cleveland. But that, you know, like you look at the number four grouping right behind him, the Green Bay Packers, they have Aaron Rodgers as the second best quarterback, Aaron Jones as the 21st best running back, and Devontae Adams as the 10th best wide receiver. And that's all the way up at number four. So even that's a little bit surprising just when you look at those rankings of the other guys.
I think you could probably make a strong argument that Jarvis Landry could be more important than Odell Beckham.
I think you could as well. That's a very good point.
Problem is, if that happens, Odell's not going to be happy.
Yeah.
And so that's just going to send things
the whole thing's gonna go
spiraling
down the
downhill. Yep. All right, so Cleveland number three, best trios in the NFL. Number two, you may have to put an asterisk by this because will the running back still be with
right.
the team that's number two? The L.A. Chargers, the number two trio, with Phillip Rivers, Melvin Gordon, and Keenan Allen. No argument with Rivers and Allen. Gordon hasn't fumbled in a long time. He's a two-way player, catches the ball, runs the ball well, but he has basically just told the Chargers, pay me or trade me. He wants to renegotiate his contract. So now you get back to the old argument. Do you pay a lot for a running back? Running backs have been devalued the last few years. He is a guy that has really helped the Chargers be a playoff team. They can probably still be that without him and not as good offensively. So I have no problem with the Chargers number two because Rivers, we know what he can do. Allen probably doesn't get as much credit as he should. Yeah. He's an awfully high-end player. And Gordon's been very, very good. First couple of years in the NFL, he was figuring it out. Now I think he is one of those top 10 running backs in the National Football League. But the problem is, will he be with the Chargers when the season gets underway?
Will he be there? And he only ran for 885 yards last year. He missed four games. I mean, he still averaged over 5 yards a carry, which in the NFL is great. I mean, if you're averaging over four a carry in the NFL, that's good. But again, you've got all these guys who are splitting time right now. There aren't a whole lot of true workhorse running backs in the NFL. And, yeah, if he's going to be the same kind of issue that we saw last year in Pittsburgh, this could go away pretty quickly for the Chargers.
Mm-hmm. Number one, the New Orleans Saints with the old Purdue Boilermakers still at quarterback, Drew Brees. You've got Alvin Kamara, who will have an even bigger role this year since the Saints have moved on from their other starting running back, who escapes me right now, the Alabama kid, Ingram.
Yeah.
And then Michael Thomas, a terrific young wide receiver. That should be the number one group, in my opinion. Breeze, Kamara, and Thomas. Even though Breeze is getting up there in years, he is still as good as anybody in the National Football League. You feel like when he takes the field, a 70% completion day is coming.
Yeah, and we did our rankings of the top quarterbacks in each conference recently, and I've got Drew Brees as my number one in the NFC, and I mean, you can make a case that maybe he's the best in the NFL right now. He obviously he showed no signs of letting down last year, and I think there's every reason to expect that he's going to be right back up there doing it again this season.
Okay, let's take a look at this from a different perspective. The Colts, the Lions, and the Bears are three local teams. How do they line up? Well, let me rank them first just by those three. They feel like the Colts have the best trio of the three, the Lions second, and the Bears third. Overall in the National Football League, the Colts come in at number 9, the Lions at 19, and the Bears all the way down at 23. Now, let me dig a little deeper. The Colts, you can't go wrong with Andrew Luck, Marlon Mack, and T.Y. Hilton. That, to me, is every bit as good as Cleveland at number 3.
Mm-hmm.
You got the Lions all the way down at 19. Matthew Stafford, Kerryon Johnson, and Kenny Galladay. That's their trio. Is that better than the Bears trio? Now, here's where it gets a little tricky. They've got Mitchell Trubisky as the Bears quarterback, of course. But then they have David Montgomery as the starting running back. You put Cohen in there, to me, I think that really helps the look of these three. And you've got Allen Robinson as the wide receiver. So I guess my first question is, you look at the Lions and the Bears, which trio would you rather have?
I agree with what they've with the rankings that they've got. I would take the Luck, Marlon Mack, T.Y. Hilton trio. I think T.Y. Hilton is one of the top wide receivers in the NFL. Marlon Mack, really all three of these running backs are relative no-names. So like if you're going to look at the wide receivers in that group, T.Y. Hilton, Kenny Galladay, Allen Robinson, T.Y. Hilton definitely head and shoulders above them, and I would put Luck ahead of the other two quarterbacks as well.
I kind of like the Bears over the Lions right now only because of the offense the Bears are running might make those guys look a little better than the Stafford, Johnson, and Galladay group. But again, if you put Cohen in there, I really like the Bears a whole lot more than the Lions.
Yeah.
I think the most interesting part of the list is what I mentioned earlier, the Colts being below Cleveland. I think if you ask Cleveland to trade Mayfield, Chubb, and Beckham for Luck, Mack, and Hilton, I think I'd do that if I'm Cleveland.
I would. Completely.
I don't think there's a significant amount of difference, but I'm going to take my chances with Luck and Hilton right there, and I'll figure out the running back position.
Yeah.
I trust Hilton more than Beckham.
Yeah, completely.
I've seen too many of those sideline blow-ups from Beckham, and I mean,
that's why he's in Cleveland. Yeah.
Well, you're a Cowboy fan, so you watch a lot of the NL East. I mean, is he a pretty dependable catcher of the football? Do you worry about any dropsies at all with Beckham, or are you okay with him?
I mean, I don't worry about drops with Odell Beckham, but he kind of gets lost in the shuffle sometimes. What's really been maybe harder to gauge is the fact that the Giants have been so bad overall as a team the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. And you've got the typical, if the ball's not going Odell Beckham's way, you've got those issues with him. He's become bigger than the whole operation with their offense. So, I mean, skill-wise, he's right there with anybody. But at the same time, I think consistency is an issue. And just the fact that he's been on some bad teams and then the attitude that's come with him.
Okay. So NFL.com, best trios, interesting list. Saints, Chargers, Browns, 1, 2, 3. Colts, 9. Lions, 19. Bears, 23. We've got some breaking news to talk about. Notre Dame baseball has their new head coach. And as Sean has talked about recently, it is Link Jarrett, a 2-time Southern Conference Coach of the Year at UNC Greensboro. He has been named the 21st head baseball coach in Notre Dame program history. And I'm reading this press release on the fly here, so bear with me.
Sure.
And he has done a pretty remarkable job at Greensboro, helping them win their first ever conference tournament championship in 2017, second ever regular season championship in 2018. His program has won 34 or more games each of the last four seasons. And his offenses have been pretty good in the Southern Conference. Five of the last seven seasons, Greensboro has led that conference in hitting. And I'm trying to get a little more info here because, here we go, Jarrett played at Florida State. He was an assistant on that staff in 2003. So that makes a little sense because at the end of the press release, there's a comment from former Florida State head coach Mike Martin, who just retired. He says, quote, "Link was a self-made player. He got my attention early with his work ethic, intelligence, and desire. When he became a coach with us, it truly reinforced what I had always thought, that one day he was going to be a Division I head coach. Notre Dame will excel under his leadership," end quote. That's from just retired Florida State head coach Mike Martin. So, Mr. College Baseball, you got Link Jarrett as the new Notre Dame baseball coach. It's a guy you thought that was going to get the job. You've mentioned his name for, I guess, about a month since Mick Aoki was not brought back. So how about just with initial reaction from you on the hire of Jarrett?
I think it's a good head, a good pick. It's kind of fallen outside the mold maybe a little bit when you look at the last couple of head coaches Notre Dame brought in, where they went with guys who had some experience coaching in the North, I guess. But I was looking yesterday at kind of some of the bullet points on Link Jarrett, just in case this was going to happen anytime soon. And I know he had their UNC Greensboro team has had a good academic track record since he's been there, so that's obviously important at Notre Dame. He's from that footprint that's in the middle of the ACC, where most of the rest of the teams reside in the ACC, so he's used to recruiting down there. He's got good, strong ties down there. And you mentioned the conference tournament championship they had in 2017. That actually broke a 20. They went to the NCAA tournament, obviously, by winning their conference. It broke a 20-year drought for Greensboro in the NCAA tournament. So, yeah, there's obviously some work to be done here at Notre Dame, but he's got a really great offensive track record that you mentioned. You look, they've had a lot of good numbers. They've had some pretty solid pitching as well. So, it's time to hit the ground running, I guess. From what I understand, he's going to be in town until the middle of next week. And then, as we mentioned before, the open recruiting period where you can talk to recruits ends at the end of this month. So he's going to get out and hit the road recruiting here pretty soon.
Well, according to the press release, he met with his new team earlier today at Notre Dame. So he's met the baseball team. And within the press release, Jarrett is quoted as saying, quote, "I'd like to thank Jack Swarbrick and Jody Sadler for navigating this process and giving me the opportunity to lead this baseball program. It is truly an honor to be the head coach at Notre Dame. I want to build this program into one that will contend for championships in the ACC. We have to work tirelessly to upgrade everything that we do in our program. I want this program to be a model of consistency and excellence in college baseball," end quote. And to be consistent in the ACC, being a Northern school, that is quite the challenge. If he achieves that, he's going to probably triple his salary, right? First and foremost. But no, seriously, it is tough to be consistent even as a really good program in this conference. But it's a program right now that's looking for new navigation. The change from the Big East to the ACC, we knew it was going to be a very difficult challenge, the most difficult of all the sports at Notre Dame, making that transition to the ACC. So I don't think, Sean, you or I or anybody is surprised that it's been a struggle to be a 500 team of the ACC. Things have to fall into place. But just first little gathering of information, listening to you, it sounds like a guy that's recruited very well at Greensboro. Mm-hmm. I like the sound of his offense as being very, very good. So hopefully this translates to some good things. But I think we got to be patient because he's hired on July 12th, and, you know, we're smack dab in the middle of the recruiting process. I think, what, July 31st is kind of an ending point?
Right, exactly.
For some of the recruiting for baseball. So he doesn't have a whole lot of time for this recruiting cycle, so we just have to kind of let things play out and give him a couple of years to get his guys into the program to see what he can do with this Irish program. I'm curious to see what are the possibilities with this particular program. It's tough being an ACC member.
No, absolutely. It's Notre Dame is kind of, I mean, they're on an island when you're talking about the rest of the ACC in terms of baseball, because even the other two private schools, Wake Forest and Duke in the ACC, are at least down in North Carolina, where it's a little bit different down there. But you read that quote from Mike Martin, the Hall of Fame retired Florida State baseball coach, and as you said, Link Jarrett played there, went to the College World Series three times with Florida State in the early 90s. And from what I understand, he interviewed down at Florida State with Martin retiring, but Martin's son, Mike Martin Jr., ended up getting the job. No surprise there. So just the fact that he was considered for that, I think, says a lot about him as well.
Well, I know Michigan is the only Division I program in the country with their basketball coach and football coach both being alumni. So they're in a unique situation, and I will guarantee you Notre Dame is the only university in Division I that has a Link and a Muffet as head coaches.
That's
I think we're the only people lucky enough to have those two individuals at the University of Notre Dame.
That's a very
good
point.
And Muffet's been absolutely amazing all these years, winning championships, and we'll see what Link can do with the Irish baseball program. All right, so that's the breaking news. Notre Dame baseball has their new head coach from UNC Greensboro, Link Jarrett. We hope to get the opportunity to talk to him next week on the program. We'll step aside. My 5 question of the day is next, 551 at WSBT.
One question, 5 answers. This is the My 5 question of the day on Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT.
Mike Bray's Fighting Irish basketball team's non-conference schedule is out, so Sean ranks the 5 most difficult games from that list. We'll go 5-1. Number 1 is the most difficult. We begin with number 5.
I'm going to go with Fairleigh Dickinson at number 5. The Knights returned 3 double-figure scores and 3 of their top 4 rebounders from a team that won 21 games and went to the NCAA tournament last year.
Fairleigh Dickinson, number 5. Number 4.
Number 4 is the Toledo Rockets, who went 25-8 overall, 13-5 in the MAC, which was the second-best record in the conference. They do lose 2 starters who are their top 2 scorers, but they return a pair of double-figure scores as well as 2 other guys who averaged 8.5 and 8.9, or 8.5 points and 8.9 rebounds.
Pretty good list right there. Number 3.
Number 3 is UCLA, the Bruins. Just 17-6 last year. They did manage to beat Notre Dame, obviously, out at Pauley Pavilion. You've got former Cincinnati head coach Mick Cronin leading UCLA into Purcell for the first time in 10 years, and Mike Bray has won 7 out of 10 all-time against his old buddy Mick Cronin.
Okay, yeah, Coach Cronin. See what he can do out there in Los Angeles. Number 2 on your list of most difficult games on the Irish non-conference basketball schedule.
Indiana.
IU
finished in 9th place in the Big Ten. They lost Romeo Langford to the NBA after just a year. Juwan Morgan as well. So their top 2 scorers and their only double-figure scorers. They bring back a lot of other guys with experience, and they also add the number 29 player in the country, Trace Jackson Davis, power forward from Center Grove.
And we are up to number 1, the most difficult game on Mike Bray's Notre Dame men's basketball non-conference schedule.
The Turtles from Maryland. After a 5th-place finish in the Big Ten last year, Mark Turgeon returns a slew of talent. They lost second-leading scorer Bruno Fernando to the NBA, but they have a good inside-outside duo with Anthony Kawan and Jalen Smith, along with 3 other guys who averaged around 8.5 points last year.
And that takes care of our My 5 question of the day. We're coming up on 557 at 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Budweiser's weekday sports beat from 96.1 WSBT, brought to you by Budweiser, the Food Bank of Northern Indiana, Eddy Street Commons at Notre Dame, hosting Coffee and Cars tomorrow from 9 to 1. The Cubs beat the Pirates 4-3 at Wrigley Field. Jason Hayward, the go-ahead base hit. And the eighth inning, Craig Kimbrell got the save in the ninth for Chicago. We'll step aside for a moment. NL Power Rankings, Rapid Fire, Chicago Cubs report coming up on WSBT South Bend at 6 o'clock.
Celebrating 25 years on the air. This is Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.
Notre Dame is moving on to the Elite Eight. Taylor, he stopped. Notre Dame wins.
Luke Leitner and Small Bone have been the catalysts for South Bend St. Joseph's.
Jalen Smith verbally committed to play football at Notre Dame.
And Notre Dame is going to Omaha for the first time since 1957.
Rebound for the wall middle. Score!
Congratulations, Tom, on the championship.
Thank you. We brought one back to South Bend, finally.
Ryan Newman, Roger Penske, win the Daytona 500.
Leitner going to try to sneak it ahead. Touchdown, SC.
Can't express how sorry I am towards Matt Tye.
And the White Sox have won the World Series.
I don't pay a damn bit of attention to what people on the outside say, because I understand none of them, though.
York now, in front, Ogilvy, they score! They score! Notre Dame to the Frozen Four!
The Colts of Indianapolis win Super Bowl 41.
The Fighting Irish are national champions in 2001. Notre Dame, Notre Dame, Notre Dame is the national champion.
Is that the play that will seal the playoff bid for Fighting Irish?
Here are your hosts, Darren Pritchett and Sean Stiers.
We are still here. Thanks for joining us. Hour number two, Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat, presented by Budweiser, the Food Bank of Northern Indiana, and Eddy Street Commons at Notre Dame. Coffee and cars tomorrow from 9 until 1. Well, the breaking news of the day surrounding the Notre Dame baseball program, the Fighting Irish have announced their new head coach. The 21st in program history is Link Jarrett, who played at Florida State. Last 7 years at UNC Greensboro, doing some great things with that Spartan program. And now he's coming to South Bend to take over this Notre Dame baseball program. Mick Aoki was not brought back at the end of this season. And Link Jarrett now in charge of the Fighting Irish baseball program. He's in town today meeting his new team, and we hope to talk to him next week here on WSBT Radio. So Link Jarrett, the new head coach at Notre Dame. Chicago Cubs, a 4-3 victory over the Pittsburgh Pirates this afternoon. Chris Bryant had a home run. Jason Hayward, a go-ahead RBI base hit in the bottom of the eighth inning. So entering play tonight, the Cubs, a game in front of the Milwaukee Brewers, 2.5 in front of St. Louis, and they push the Pirates now 3.5 back. Which leads perfectly into this week's installment of the National League Power Rankings, which I will try to take care of, and I'll let you take over the hosting duties from here. But
alrighty.
Sorry to be boring. If you heard last week's Power Rankings, they haven't changed.
All right. Well, I guess we'll see how close people were paying attention then when you did your Power Rankings.
Not likely.
Last week. Let's start with number six, Darren.
You know, I could go Rockies here. I could go Cardinals. You know, I'm big on the Padres right now. I'm pushing them back at number seven right now. They're on the brink of entering the list. But I'm going to stick with the Phillies just because I look at the roster and I just think it's going to click at some point. Aaron Nola not pitching like an ace has not helped. Bryce Harper hasn't really been $30 million worth offensively so far this year. Hoskins has been okay. Real Muto. Losing Andrew McCutcheon, I think that is one of those heart and soul players off that team that has really affected them. They have not been the same team since he went down with an ACL injury. So I'm going to leave the Phillies at six. They're 47-43, but there's several teams, Arizona, San Diego, Colorado, St. Louis, Pittsburgh, that are kind of on their doorstep right now.
Yeah, Bryce Harper has not been great after signing the big contract, but at the same time, he still has 16 home runs and 62 RBIs. So, and he's leading the team with the 62 True. RBIs. There's still room for improvement, but you got numbers like that, and there's room to improve. I don't think that's a horrible sign.
Well, he just seems like he's always going to be a guy that's not going to have a batting average that's going to wow you,
mm-hmm.
but he does walk a lot. He gets on base at a pretty good clip. So he's never going to be a guy that's going to hit for a whopping average, but he is going to be a guy that will consistently get on base. And the home run ball is always going to be a part of his game. But right now, the Phillies, a bit of a mystery at 47-43.
Yep. All right, so that's your number six team in the power rankings. Who's your number five team in the National League?
Well, I got the Nationals at number five, and I continue to ride the Scherzer, Corbin, and Strasburg starting rotation. Anthony Rendon, another terrific year at third base. He's hit 20 home runs already this year. He's going to be an interesting free agent to see where he's going to land following the 2019 campaign. You know, they got Soto out there, Robles, two young outfielders. Robles isn't hitting for a lot of average, but there's some pop and some speed there. And I feel like it's a team that's going to have to add to their bullpen if they're going to be a serious postseason contender. They have ridden some really good starting pitching over the last 3 weeks, and that has helped them get back into playoff contention and back to number five in my power rankings.
You know what's funny about Steven Strasburg is really since he had the Tommy John a few years back and then the limited innings and not starting in the playoffs and all that kind of stuff. I mean, you look at what he's done over the last several years since then. He's just been so consistent. He has a million strikeouts a year. I mean, more strikeouts than innings pitched. He turns in solid ERAs in the threes and the twos. But really, he's not talked about very much, mostly because you've got Max Scherzer out there. But, I mean, you'll take a guy like Strasburg as part of that rotation any day of the week.
He's the guy that kind of broke the norm as he took a salary before he got to free agency.
Yeah.
With his agent, who's escaping me right now, his name. Just having a brain freeze.
Scott Boras?
Scott Boras, thank you.
I can't remember if it was him or not.
Yeah, it was Boras, and he decided to take the money before he got to free agency. That never, never happens with Boras clients. Strasburg actually did that. I think the injury concern, he just wanted that money up front. Yeah. You know what? I can't blame him. As a pitcher. Not at all.
Absolutely.
All right, so Nationals at number five.
All right, number four.
I'm going to stick with the Milwaukee Brewers despite the normal concerns. They're 47-44 right now, a game behind the Cubs. Their strength last year was offense and bullpen. The offense is still good. The bullpen has not been as efficient, and they have thrown a lot of innings so far this year. The big difference, Jeffries has not been as good. Knebel has been on the disabled list with Tommy John surgery. He's not going to pitch this year. Hader has been really, really good. Not exceptional as last year, but still well above average. And I think a big key is, when you think about the postseason, Brandon Woodruff was the guy they used in the bullpen. They moved him to the rotation, and he's been great, but it's also weakened that bullpen, which has had some injury issues and has led to them just not being as strong as they were last year. And when you don't have the great starting rotation consistency, you put a lot of pressure on the bullpen. They've been used a lot. They have not been as good. So that's a big concern right now in Milwaukee.
Yeah, it's just
still
kind of
number four on my list.
Just kind of a vicious cycle with between the fact that you start off and you don't have that great a starting pitching. You've got to rely on the bullpen the way they did last year, plus getting into the playoffs. And then it's right back in there this year. It's just like that dog chasing its tail. It never catches up, it seems like. They're the team to me that's got to make some kind of probably two different moves to address pitching, whether it's two starters, one reliever, one starter, two relievers, whatever it happens to be. They've got to do something.
I would agree with you.
Okay, number three.
Going to stick with the Chicago Cubs at number three, now 48-43 after winning today. You know, Jed Hoyer was on The Score today, the Cubs pregame show in Chicago, and was asked by Lynn Casper, you know, what are a couple of things that need to change? And he said, first off, the sloppy play has to stop. And he referenced the World Championship team in 2016. He said they were one of the cleanest teams that he had ever seen in terms of not making costly errors, throwing to the right base, not making base running blunders. And those are things that have hurt the Cubs so far this season. They have committed the second most errors in the National League. There have been base running issues. They have made throws to wrong bases, leading to runs being scored. And Hoyer felt like that needs to change. Plus, the second thing he mentioned, we've got to hit in the clutch. And we gave you some of the numbers yesterday of some of the key Cub hitters not hitting with runners in scoring position, including Bryant and Schwarber. If they start hitting in the clutch more, all of a sudden, to me, the Cubs are the one team that can pull away in the National League Central. I know Darvish was great today. That's a great sign. You get Hamels back. He threw off flat ground today. He won't be back till August, but you get him back at a normal level of pitching with Lester, and all of a sudden, that group is going to be in awfully good shape, and, you know, that's a group that can pull away from Milwaukee and win the NL Central. I don't think anybody else can pull away from the rest of the pack in the NL Central.
I agree with that. I think it's all there. It's a matter of getting it all together.
They've got the nucleus. They just need to play better.
Yep.
And some of the supporting cast needs to be better.
Yep, absolutely. All right, so we've got the Phillies at number 6, the Nationals at number 5, the Brewers at number 4, the Cubs at number 3. Who's your number 2 National League team?
Well, I went back to the old Atlanta Braves at number 2. They are up to 54-37 right now, leaders of the National League East. It's just a fun nucleus to get behind with Ronald Acuna Jr., the reigning rookie of the year. Austin Riley has come up and hit 16 home runs. Ozzie Albies has 14 home runs. They almost became the first team in Major League history to have 6 different players with at least 15 home runs at the All-Star break. They had 5, and Albies ended up with 14.
Mm-hmm.
So they've got a good mix of young position player talent. Then they've got Freddie Freeman and Nick Markakis and Josh Donaldson to add a little, I guess, gristle to that lineup, some of the older guys and the good young pitching. Again, it's a team that probably has to add a starting pitcher and a bullpen piece to be a serious contender to have a chance to beat the Dodgers in the postseason. But that young group is not scared. And, oh, by the way, Dansby Swanson has come into his own. That's a big, big help.
Absolutely.
To Atlanta, as right now they are 17 games over 500 at the All-Star break.
When you're the guy who's the number one pick, you've got to produce big time at some point, and he's really doing it this year. All right, that leaves just one team left. Not a whole lot of suspense for the National League now.
They probably will go wire to wire from preseason to the end of the regular season. It's the Dodgers at 60-32. Very hard to find many weaknesses. A.J. Pollock apparently is going to be back very soon. The Notre Dame star who signed with the Dodgers during the offseason, but the center fielder got hurt back in April. Boy, the injuries have just really slowed down his progress in Major League Baseball. But he's coming back, so I don't know who's going to come out of the lineup because Pollock is such an efficient hitter and fielder. But rotation, bullpen, defense, offense, all right now well above par. They've got a 14.5 game lead, so they're not going to lose the National League West. They just keep rolling right along, and I'm kind of curious how they're going to tweak that team, because after getting the World Series each of the last 2 years and losing the World Series, they don't want to leave any stone unturned. So I cannot wait to see how they try to improve this team. I would not be shocked if they don't try to make another major move.
Yeah, I mean, the rich getting richer if they do, because they're pretty stocked as it is. And like you said, A.J. Pollock, hopefully A.J. Pollock can come back and be a productive member of that team, because he's just been so snake bit by injuries. And this thing that he's got going on with the infection in the elbow from this year is from when he had screws put in a couple of years ago. But the Dodgers, I agree with you, definitely the team to beat in the National League.
And just refreshing my memory to their prospects, they go 4 deep with some pretty good talent. I'm not going to say there's going to be that wow guy, maybe like a Nico Hoerner in the Cubs system, but they have 4 high-end players that they could deal from. Their system is fairly deep with lower-level talent. We see a lot of them with the Great Lakes Loons. So enough talent to probably make a significant move as they get ready for the postseason once again, as they try to impress Mary Hart and Larry King, who sit right behind home plate in the postseason.
Yep.
All right, so that's the power rankings, 6-1 in the National League. Phillies, Nationals, Brewers, Cubs, Braves, and Dodgers. Cubs win today 4-3 over the Buccos. By the way, the White Sox are in Oakland tonight to kick off their second half. We'll take a timeout. rapid fire right around the corner as Sports Beat continues. South Bend Cubs baseball tonight. Pre-game at 7:20. First pitch at 7:35. Kane County at South Bend on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.
Rapid fire starts now on Budweiser's weekday Sports Beat on 96.1 WSBT. Here is Sean Stiers and Darren Pritchett.
We'll start with little Cubs, Darren. The Cubs pulled out a 4-3 victory over the Pirates this afternoon after blowing an eighth inning 3-0 lead. So I know it's one game, but it's the start of the second half. Scale of 1 to 10, how important do you think it is for them to hold on and win the way they did today?
I mean, it's not life or death urgent, but it sets a nice tone. You see Strope give up the 3-run home run in the eighth inning, the bullpen a concern. Cubs retake the lead in the bottom of the eighth with a clutch hit, which they're looking for. And then Kimbrell did a nice job in the top of the ninth inning to earn the save. So, I mean, I'll give it a 7. It's a good tone setter. If you lose that game, yeah, it's probably one you're going to think about. Gosh, we should have won that game. But I think that's just a good way to start the year, not make or break, or a good way to start the second half, not make or break, but a good way to get things rolling once again.
I agree. Again, not make or break, but it is the start of the second half. And if you're the Cubs, after losing 5 out of 7 to the Reds and Pirates going into the All-Star break, you needed the break to kind of reset things, get a new tone set, and try to come out on a positive foot. So I just think it, again, not that it would have imploded everything, but I think it would have just been mentally pretty tough after getting a late 3-0 lead, and then to have that mammoth shot by Marte hit out onto Waveland to tie the score at 3, and then things almost, after they got the go-ahead run on a hit by Hayward in the ninth, they almost, with the Pirates down to their last two outs, it looked like maybe Bryant had thrown a ball away and pulled Rizzo off the bag for what was going to be the last out. They initially said the runner was safe. Replay came back, said he was out, so Kimbrell ends up getting the save. Wait, yeah, what? Say that again?
Was that conclusive with Rizzo's foot near the base? I didn't see any angle that was conclusive.
I didn't either, but I was just looking at the final write-up and how it all happened. It didn't look conclusive to me. I was a little bit surprised, especially just kind of when you look at the way in which he came off. I was surprised that they overturned it, but everything went their way. And when you flash back to the last time Kimber was on the mound, everything imploded. Well, that was the bases loaded, Russell threw to the wrong bag, and the whole thing in Pittsburgh. So I agree with you. I put it at a 7. They needed a positive start to the second half, and they got it after it almost got away from them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so which of these things is most likely to happen to the Cubs? They win the NL Central, they're a wild card team, or they miss the playoffs?
Most likely to happen? To me, that's a slam dunk. They're going to win the NL Central. I just don't see how the other teams are going to make enough major moves to keep them at the level of the Cubs. I know it's close right now, but the Cubs are a better team, I think, right now amongst the three top teams. I don't know if they have enough arsenal in the minors to pull off a deal like the Brewers and Cardinals do, but I think they're in really good position right now. Just throw the ball to the right base. Hitting the clutch a little more, not as many errors. Things can fall into place really quickly for Chicago. They still have the best starting pitching in the division. So, to me, that's a pretty good formula to win the National League Central once again, despite being only 5 over .500 right now.
I agree with that. I think they'll win the division. I won't be surprised if it comes right down to the wire like it did last year with the Brewers. But again, I mean, if everything stays exactly as it is right now, if nobody goes out and makes a move, I feel like the Cubs will slowly pull ahead in this thing. If the Brewers are bold enough to go out and give up some prospects and make a move, it obviously gets interesting and it kind of forces the Cubs' hands. But, I mean, as it is right now, the Brewers have the best player in the division, but I still think the Cubs have the best overall team in the division. It's just a matter of getting that all together and playing more consistently. Okay, the Atlantic League this week used robot umpires in their All-Star game. On a scale of 1 to 10, Darren, what are the chances, do you think, Major League Baseball starts using robot umpires to call balls and strikes within the next 5 years?
Next five years. Well, baseball is working with the Atlantic League to try some of these weird rules, mm-hmm. and with the robot umpires. I mean, it's on Major League Baseball's radar right now. I'm going to say it's not likely to happen in the next 5 years, but I would not be surprised beyond that if they don't try it in some capacity. Not sure I'm fond of it. Mistakes are a part of the game. And the Major League umpires do a pretty good job, all things said, with balls and strikes. There's a lot of tough decisions. I mean, the ball is being thrown harder than it ever has, so it's challenging. And to me, the home plate umpires in baseball do a better job than some of the NFL officials in NFL games in terms of consistency.
That's probably very true, considering how many more calls have to be made, especially if you're the home plate umpire. I mean, you're talking about close to 300 calls of some sort per game when you're talking about balls and strikes and plays around the field and all that kind of stuff. That's a good point, really, when you look at the total volume of it. What the thing that I liked about this is the way they did it. They used this TrackMan system, which uses Doppler radar to call the balls and the strikes, and then the home plate umpire had his phone in his pocket, and then so he's got sort of, I guess, an app that he had, and then he's got a little earbud in his ear, and so the Doppler relays the call to the phone, and then the phone goes to the ear, and he hears ball or strike. And that's kind of what, because one of the questions that I had, if baseball is going to start using technology to call balls and strikes, what was going to happen to the home plate umpire? So just based on this system they used the other night, you're still going to have a home plate umpire. You know, the union wasn't going to like it if they completely got rid of umpires behind the plate, because obviously that's another man working. So I like sort of the compromise that they're using technology, but there's still a guy behind the plate because there are other calls during the course of the game that he's going to have to be making. So he's still involved. So you're saying you don't think it's going to happen in Major League Baseball in 5 years. Do you think that at your level, single A baseball, do you think maybe we're going to see more widespread experimentation within that time frame?
Of robots or in general?
Of robots. That like Midwest League, potentially within the next 3 to 5 years, you're seeing the robots making the calls on balls and strikes.
Apparently it's a priority for baseball. They want to see if this will work, so I guess I would not be shocked.
Okay.
If it doesn't come to this level, I'd almost rather them to try it out at the upper levels. But I'm not going to be shocked if it doesn't come here at some point.
Okay. All right. So I give it a 6 within the next 5 years. It just seems like it's coming with all the technology, and it was an interesting experiment that they made this week when they used it in that Atlantic League All-Star game.
Can I add something real quick before your next one?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Just saw this. The list of FBS schools to have never played an FCS school in football is down to 2.
Saw that.
USC is going to play UC Davis in 2021, Nevada in 2023, San Jose State in 2024, and UC Davis will be USC's first FCS opponent in school history. So the two schools to have never played an FCS school from the FBS, UCLA and Notre Dame.
And then there were 2.
And Notre Dame will be last.
They will.
Guaranteed.
I'll be shocked if they ever play an FCS team.
Agreed. I give that a 10.
Yeah, and that's the one thing, because there's always going to be, there are always people who are talking about Notre Dame's schedule and this whole conference business and the whole thing. And so Notre Dame and UCLA are the only ones who can say, go take care of yourselves, because we're not playing FCS teams at all.
Well, Chip Kelly's there at UCLA now. As they try to improve, gain a few more wins, he might add one in the near future.
Yeah, maybe so. Maybe
leaving
it's
just
the way.
Notre Dame.
Yep. Darren, today is the 40th anniversary of Disco Demolition Night at Comiskey Park. Where were you on Disco Demolition Night? Now, the question is, what comes to mind when you think of Disco Demolition Night?
Oh, gosh. I've seen the pictures of the mess. I know that. I've never understood why that was a good idea. Blowing up things on a baseball diamond. That just doesn't seem to be a logical combination. I mean, I see some things in the Midwest League that make me cringe a little bit. Not to that extent. But, like, there's a team that has an in-between inning promotion where you have people involved in a promotion down the first and third baseline, probably in foul territory by about 6 feet. And part of it is they're blindfolded and they throw buckets of water on them. Well, throwing buckets of water on a baseball diamond near the foul line means if there's a foul ball, if there's a runner running down the line, couldn't they slip and hurt themselves on that wet grass?
Yeah.
So that's a small example that things that make me cringe when I watch minor league baseball. But I just have never understood why that was a good idea. It was a VEC promotion. But I just remember seeing the big mess out in center field. That's really the only thing that comes to mind for me.
Yeah, and I guess because they had a crate with all these disco albums in it, and they blew that crate up, and I guess they damaged the field so bad they had to forfeit their game the next day. They weren't even able to play it because they blew a crater into the hole into the outfield. It's amazing, though. I was looking at this today. More than 50,000 fans showed up for that game, which is more than triple their usual home attendance that year. So just amazing. But blowing up all these disco albums, and it's just the 70s. It's kind of like MLB's version of the great WKRP in Cincinnati turkey drop, but on a larger, louder scale, I guess. Good time.
I wasn't a fan of disco, but I never thought of blowing up that stuff. But it was interesting. That was a VEC promotion, though. Anything goes.
I would have thought that you had, like, the big floppy collars and like, one of those 70s afros back then doing your disco Darren dance. And no?
No, I just like my 8-track player.
I had one, too. The old portable 8-track player. All right, last question for tonight. Fill in the blank. The International Olympic Committee adding skateboarding, surfing, and breakdancing to the 2024 Olympics is blank.
Doesn't affect me because I hardly watch the Olympics anymore. Honestly, it's just not an amateur event anymore. I'll watch the basketball. I'll watch the hockey. I like some of the winter events, the bobsledding and that. But the summer games are kind of a yawn for me. The swimming and the track and field, I guess, are okay, but I'm not overly into it. Gymnastics, oh my gosh, not for me. So that really will not affect me a whole lot. I assume those will be in the Summer Olympics, so I will not even notice that the breakdancing competition is taking place.
Maybe they should do breakdancing on ice and make it a winter sport, and that would spice it up a little bit. To be honest,
just put the Montreal Canadiens on ice. They fall anytime anybody gets near them, so that's basically the same thing.
There you go. I mean, we were just talking about Disco Demolition Night in 1979. To me, I didn't realize breakdancing was still a thing, so I guess I'm more than shocked that it's going to become an Olympic sport. I thought this was one of those 80s things, and like an 80s fad that went away by the time the 90s rolled around. So I was surprised to even hear breakdancing was still a thing. But surfing and skateboarding, I guess I can see, but there are a lot of landlocked countries that end up hosting the Olympics, so I don't know how you consistently make surfing an Olympic sport. But
so we have breakdancing in the Olympics, but not baseball.
There you go. The Olympics, I guess they want to get younger. That's their goal, because these are those X Games type sports. Maybe you should ask your son about this, what he thinks. Since he's kind of in that age demographic, it seems like they're trying to capture by getting some of these sports.
Yeah, I don't think he'll be overly interested.
That's my guess. He's not
skateboarding
or breakdancing. No,
we're just trying to hit a baseball right now. That's our goal in life at this point.
Good. And that's tough enough at sometimes.
It can be, to say the least. All right, that's Rapid Fire for tonight. We'll do it again on Monday. We'll take a quick timeout, and coming back, we'll have a Chicago Cubs report on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. It is 6:43 at 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Next segment, we're going to do a little NFL storyline that the Wall Street Journal has uncovered. A plan for the NFL, they want to go to 18 games during the regular season. But there's an asterisk. There's a but. And we'll see what football fans think about the but coming up in our next segment here on WSBT Radio. We're going to talk some baseball in this segment as the Chicago Cubs were in action this afternoon, and that kicks off our Chicago Cubs report this evening. And the Cubs are able to beat the Pittsburgh Pirates this afternoon by a score of 4-3. Here are the really good things for the Cubs. First off, they got a great starting performance from Yu Darvish. He has never won a game at Wrigley Field since signing that big contract before the start of the 2018 season. And today, he was good enough to be the winning pitcher, but of course the offense did not come through until he had left the ballgame. So Darvish today was spectacular. His final line, 6 innings, 2 hits, no runs, a walk, 8 strikeouts, and he threw strikes, which is another good sign. 94 pitches, 62 strikes. The fastball was lively. It was mid-90s with movement. The slider was very crisp. That was a very, very good start for Darvish. So he gave his team a chance to win, just walks away with a no decision because Chris Archer, over his first 6 innings, he put up 6 scoreless frames, but then ran into trouble in the 7th inning. It all started when Chris Bryant was at the plate. He had a pop-up down the right field line. Melky Cabrera, who did one of his rumbling and stumbling routines toward the sidewall, he was looking up into the bright sunshine. I think he took his eye off the ball to see the sidewall. And then when he looked back up, the sun blinded him. He couldn't find the ball, and the ball hit the sidewall very close to fair territory. So new life for Bryant. What happens? Chris Archer throws a breaking ball that was a cement mixer that backed up, and Bryant crushed it into the left field seats for his 18th home run of the year. Cubs led 1-0. Later on, Robel Garcia had a sacrifice fly. He scored Anthony Rizzo, and then Victor Caratini walked and would later score on a walk to David Bodie, who picked up the bases-loaded RBI. And the Cubs had a 3-0 lead going to the 8th inning. Pedro Strop came on, and he threw a cement-mixing slider that Marte of Pittsburgh creamed completely out of the ballpark and left. The 3-run home run tied the game at 3. But then in the bottom of the 8th inning, a clutch hit from Jason Hayward with 2 out. He singled the opposite way into left field, and that plated the go-ahead run. It was Anthony Rizzo, and Chicago jumped in front 4-3. And from there, it was Craig Kimbrell, a 1-2-3 ninth inning to record his 3rd save of the year. Winning pitcher Randy Rosario got 1 out in the 8th inning. He's 1-0. Kimbrell gets the save. The loss goes to Crick. He falls to 3-5. And for the Cubs today, as they look for clutch hits, they were 3-for-6 with runners in scoring position. They stranded 6, but, John, we've talked a lot about making baseball more exciting, what baseball is trying to do to make things more exciting. So we start the second half of the season today, even though there was a game last night. Everybody plays today. So in clubhouses all across baseball, and fans maybe tuning in online at work or watching on TV, what do they see in the first game of the second half today? You see the Pirates and the Cubs combine to start the game 0-for-22 with 13 strikeouts.
Wow.
Now, Darvish and Archer are great, but at some point you cut down on the swing, you put the ball in play. That's how we started the second half. 0-for-22 with 13 strikeouts until Javier Baez got a base hit to right field. And I think over the first 6 innings, the two teams combined for 3 hits. They were 3 singles, and that was it. So that's how we started the second half.
What's a single?
0-for-22 with 13 strikeouts. Isn't that the truth?
they're practically extinct in baseball. I didn't know that was still allowed.
Supposedly, it is allowed. And now in the Atlantic League, on any pitch that gets away from the catcher, you can steal first base as a batter. How about that? You can throw a wild pitch, or a ball gets away from the catcher. If the ball is not caught, the batter can steal first base now in the Atlantic League.
Really?
Any count, yes.
Interesting.
So if the ball gets away, the first pitch goes to the backstop, you can run to first base and steal first. Now, I'm not sure how that's recorded in the box score, but that's one of the trial things being done in the Atlantic League. And this is Major League Baseball working with them on it. You also, in order to try to get the running game more involved in baseball, here's another rule they're trying out. How about this? In order to throw to a base as a pitcher, you have to completely leave the rubber. Now, righties do that anyway,
yeah.
But a lefty cannot just make a move to first.
Right.
They have to step off and throw to first. Now, how weird is that after all these years?
No kidding. That's
enough. Do you like any of this stuff?
That stealing first, it has me intrigued, but at the same time, is that really baseball? I mean, I guess they're trying to find a way to add more action to the sport. What do you think about that?
Sorry, I'm a traditionalist. That's the most ridiculous idea in baseball I've heard. I mean, come on. Just have the hitters put the ball in play more, not swing as hard as they can with two strikes.
I agree.
That's how you get on base.
Yeah.
Yeah, the whole stealing first base. I don't know how it's recorded in the box score, but to me, that's absolutely absurd.
I had never heard that they were experimenting with that. That is really unusual.
For people that don't follow baseball, the Atlantic League is independent baseball. So these are not players tied with major league teams. They're trying to get back into major league organizations. But this is independent baseball that is trying the robots and the stealing of first base, and you have to step off the rubber to throw to a base. It's absolute chaos right now in that league.
And it's weird that they would be experimenting with allowing a batter to steal first base on a ball that gets away from the catcher, which is you're essentially trying to bring more action, more offense to the game. But making a left-hand pitcher step off the rubber before throwing to first, that just doesn't make sense to me either.
If Billy Hamilton's at the plate, are you likely to throw him a breaking ball that might go in the dirt?
Yeah, no
and get
kidding.
Away?
No kidding.
He's going to get a ton of fastballs. You don't want to throw that slider or curveball in the dirt. It bounces away, and then one of the fastest guys in baseball is going to steal first base on
That's
you.
True. That's true.
It would change the way you develop, the way you draft. Putting together your 25-man roster, we're never going to have to worry about that, but it would definitely change things. South Bend Cubs edged King County last night 2-1. I profiled Chris Morrell on last night's program. Well, he drove in both runs last night, went 2-for-3, last 17, hitting .382 with two homers and 12 RBI. Faustino Carrera pitches for South Bend tonight, a left-hander, his last 10 games, 3-2 with a 2.30 ERA, 58 and two-thirds innings pitched in those 10 starts, 47 hits allowed with 47 strikeouts. South Bend and Kane County wrap up their three-game series tonight. And South Bend has only lost one home series so far this year. Their overall home record is 31-14. They won 34 home games all of last year. When we come back, we will tell you more about the T's NFL story. And that is 18 regular season games. Yeah, we're probably not going to be surprised if that doesn't happen. But a new proposal has kind of a, oh, by the way, this has to happen too. And I don't know if you'll like that. We'll tell you what it is next on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Sean Stiers, Darren Pritchett, SportsBeat on WSBT Radio. Link Jarrett is the new baseball coach at the University of Notre Dame. That announcement was made during the 5 o'clock hour by the university. Jarrett's 7 years at UNC Greensboro, former Florida State baseball player, the 21st head coach in the history of Notre Dame baseball. He's in town today. We hope to talk to him next week on the program. So Link Jarrett, the new head coach for Notre Dame baseball. So, Sean, let me get your reaction to this.
Okay.
Andrew Beaton of the Wall Street Journal is reporting this, that the National Football League is really serious about expanding the regular season from 16 to 18 games. There's been a lot of debate what to do with the four exhibition games. It's not fair to the fans. The season ticket holders have to pay full price for an exhibition game that doesn't matter. You don't really get to see the best players play that long in those games. So there's been talk for a while, well, what can we do to get rid of the four exhibition games? One of the things that has been talked about, 18 regular season games with two exhibition games. And we had Garrick Dieter on the program recently from South Bend playing for the Kansas City Chiefs. He talked about it's a chance for him to get on the field and impress the coaches, those exhibition games. Now, Tom Brady doesn't need four exhibition games. That's a whole different conversation. So the new push, according to Andrew Beaton, is the NFL wants 18 regular season games. But, Sean, here's the catch. Each player on an NFL roster will be limited to 16 games. So Tom Brady would only be allowed to play in 16 of the 18 games. You would have to play your backup quarterback in two of the games. So, I've not heard of this before. This is a new concept. I do not understand how you can just say two games you can't play, but that's something that's being proposed. I don't think this is ever going to pass.
I wouldn't think so.
Now, a lot of teams that clinch the division or their playoff spot have nothing to gain. They'll take a week off or 2 weeks off, depending on the situation. But just to ask a team, oh, by the way, there's two games you can't play Tom Brady. Let's see. Week four, they play Arizona. They'll beat them. We'll sit Tom Brady. That's almost unthinkable.
Well, and then what about your left tackle? So then Tom Brady's going to start, but now you're going to put a backup left tackle in while Tom Brady is starting and potentially risk losing your franchise quarterback, not just for two games that he's mandatorily got to sit out, but for the entire season. I just don't see how that could ever fly.
I know Tony Dungy did an interview. He was asked about this, and the example is the Browns play at Arizona in Week 15. It's Cleveland's once-per-8-year trip to the desert. Browns fans in Phoenix, or Cardinal fans in general, who might want to see Baker Mayfield, Odell Beckham, and Jarvis Landry play, would be upset if they found out 90 minutes before kickoff that one or more of them is healthy, but they're going to be scratched from the football game.
Well, the NBA doesn't care about that stuff, but it is a good hypothetical, but I just can't see it ever happening, because for one, to make this kind of thing happen, you're going to have to expand the rosters quite a bit to have the bodies to allow guys to be able to sit down like that.
Practice squad becomes more important.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, quarterback is actually one position they could actually play all 18. With all the safety that has been put in place to protect them, you can actually get away with it. But offensive linemen, defensive linemen, they take a beating. Linebackers, it's tough, man. Running backs, to ask them to play two more games is a lot.
I agree.
But asking coaches and organizations to only play players 16 out of 18 games, bizarre. Very bizarre, to say the least.
Plus the fact that you've got these guys making 20 to 35 million bucks a year, so you're going to pay them all this money, and then they're going to have to sit for two games as well. I just don't see it ever being able to fly.
I don't think we'll have to worry about that, but just an idea that the NFL has had. They're just trying to figure out a way to keep the money. It's actually a good thought, because the networks kind of make the money back with an extra week of games. Sports Beat brought to you by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds by Eddy Street Commons at Notre Dame. Coffee and Cars tomorrow from 9 to 1. Food Bank of Northern Indiana. Hunger is a story we can end. Find out how at feedindiana.org. Enjoy your weekend.